Okay. Welcome to Click Clack, episode 6. I'm Haley.
I'm Joshua Grove, filling in for Molly Harney.
Yeah, Molly was not able to make it today because she's at manager training for her job. So Josh is filling in. So thanks for coming down.
Absolutely. Stoked to be here.
Yeah. We got Dave Mateo and we have Turner Thorne.
What's up, guys?
Howdy.
What's up? Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for coming. So today we're just going to talk a little bit about the origins of where Dave got into Kendama and same with Turner. And then we're also going to talk about Dave's event Weekend in the Woods coming up in June. So get stoked.
Yeah, absolutely. We're stoked to delve into the underbelly of the Mateo and see where the flow goes. So it'll be a fun little click-clack episode. And I'm stoked to be here. And Turner came out of the woodworks to join us as
How
well.
How exciting so is this right here? What?
Yeah.
Turner Thorne in the flesh. When I saw you when I got here from Vegas, dude, I was so happy to see you. You have no idea.
Dude, I'm happy. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy the timing worked out.
Yeah, it worked out great.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming, you guys. Crazy. Stoked to have you on the show. All right, so let's just dive right in. Where and when did you get into Kendama, Dave?
I got into Kendama back in 2010. October 2010, I believe, or 2011. I worked in a guitar shop called Carvin in Natomas, Sacramento. Sacramento, it was like a small city called Natomas. And my boss was very lenient with what we had to do during the day. We would just have to like wipe guitars down whenever a customer would walk in. We'd have to help them with selling PA systems or guitars or I forgot what they're called.
Amplifiers,
yeah. You know. And he let me be on my computer. I was scrolling through Facebook one day and I saw this video, and it was a collaboration video between the Ken Garden and Jake Weens and then Ube's Ice Cream Shop and the Ube Urban from Ube Ice Cream Shop. And Ube is this, at the time, was like this super, super sick, like messenger bike painter. Like he had, his thing was like ice cream paint job, you know, like, yeah. And it was the most phenomenal paint. Like it had like these flakes on these bikes, and you see it and it feels like you're looking into like a Milky Way galaxy. Like it was phenomenal.
It was a shop in San Francisco.
It was a shop that was made inside of a house in a garage. It was awesome.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, and there were,
yeah,
like he had different roommates in there and stuff, but it was his shop. Wow. It was awesome. But anyway, this video that I saw was the first Tama that was painted by Ube. And then shortly after that, I watched the video and I was like, what is this thing? Like, I want to know what this is. I think I can do it. It looks like I can get into it. And all I did was go on the internet and look up three cups, a ball, string, and a spike. And then Kendama USA came up. And that's where I purchased my first Kendama from, which was a Kiaki. And I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't know whether or not to get an Ozora or to get the Kiaki, like Ozora Kiaki. Like, I just went with the one that was most expensive because I assumed that it was the best one that was out there.
Yeah. And also at that time, too, like, there wasn't many options. Like, today, mm-hmm. if someone's getting into Kendama and they Google Kendama, it's, like, pages on pages come up. And like,
there's
in that day,
so
it's, like,
many.
Ozoras, like, TK16s, like... I mean, like, that's cool, though. I feel like everyone here, at least my first Kendama was an Ozora.
Mm-hmm.
Yours was a Kiaki. What was yours?
TK.
TK?
Mine was a TK as well.
TK, yeah. Yeah, it's cool to see how many Kendamas
right?
are on the market now. It's crazy.
It's unreal.
Yeah.
That's dope. So how did you get into Kendama, Turner?
I was living in Bend, Oregon in 2009. Blew my knee skiing, and a good friend of mine, Tim Durchy, had one in his truck. And gave it to me, said, while I'm on the couch, jam with this. And I'd always watched ski movies, and there was some bonus footage of J.P. Eclair in, like, UP 1.2 is what I think it was. And he played Dama in Japan, and so I had kind of been exposed. And so while injured, I played with it, and sure enough, I looked up some YouTube videos, and obviously Colin was, like, one of the first ones to come up. I think it was up to, like, Edit 3 or something he had put out, and so I watched all those and told myself, all right, I'm learning, like, all the tricks that he does. And like, at the time, those were pretty much the only videos I had. Like,
that was the only way you could really learn from people too.
Right.
Unless you knew somebody and you could like jam together, but there wasn't many people at that time. And so the only way to really like learn tricks, I feel like, was to watch edits. Because mm-hmm. Colin's edit 7 was my first edit that I watched. Yep. And then I watched your pro announcement a whole bunch. Or mm-hmm. your pro entry, I guess, right. to Konami USA.
And that has a lot to do with kids now. It's yeah. like that's one of the reasons yeah. why the progression is where it's at, mm-hmm. because they see what can be done and they're yeah. like, dude, I can do that. And yeah. then they just flip it and they make it even more crazy. So it's just like one after mm-hmm. the other leveling each other up. Mm-hmm. And that's why Kendama is like where it's at now. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's growing exponentially.
Yeah.
Like you just mentioned too, like your first exposure to Kendama was through a video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like was through a video.
Through a video.
Mm-hmm. A video.
Yeah.
Like it's so common to like hear that like other than maybe seeing it for the first time, you, like, see a video of a professional. And for me, it was like, I didn't even know there was professionals, like, let alone I just discovered this game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing, yeah. especially when you're mentioning the progression. Like,
yeah.
you put something else out there, someone's like, that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do that. Someone's done it. So now yeah. what else can I do?
Mm-hmm. I actually haven't thought of this before, but I feel like back when we all started, we were all watching edits. Like, there wasn't a thing as, like, Instagram. You can scroll through and watch one clip and
like
one
single
clip
tricks.
And one clip.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that could also, like, be one of the contributors to the progression, because people aren't spending a bunch of time making an edit, they're spending time making one trick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like more content is being pushed out more regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
especially like with like the Instagram stories yeah. Yeah. and like the 1 minute on Instagram now, like
yeah. Yeah.
you're able to
changer.
Put out like every single day one. There's really no need for edits unless you want to dive deep and like
yeah.
have a theme and
yeah.
like really
yeah.
portray something, you know. And I think that's kind of cool because you can still do what you want
yeah.
within an edit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So back in the day, you worked at the Kendama USA warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that experience.
The Kendama USA warehouse was really dope. I got to see both, like, I think they're now in, like, a third warehouse, but I was there from the very, very first warehouse, and I remember it being extremely small. It was probably, like, I don't know, like, maybe, like, a quarter of a Walgreens or something like
yeah.
that. Like, it was pretty small. And I remember just seeing a couple boxes to, like, a lot more boxes to then moving it from one warehouse to a even bigger warehouse. And then now it's, like, a giant warehouse.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much it's grown, and it's phenomenal. But working there was really... it was really awesome because I was able to see what was coming in. And I felt really, really good because I was able to see what was going out, and like I cared about this so much, and I was like, I'm sending this out to this person, like I get to send this and pack it and send
yeah.
it to the next person. And sometimes I would even like have to restring it, and then some kids would be stoked because I'd be like, dude, keep, you know, like
yeah.
doing like little notes, like Charles does it now, you know,
mm-hmm.
like I used to do that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just
totally
a great feel. Yeah, you can
yeah.
You feel your energy like going into that.
Yeah.
And then knowing that somebody else goes and grabs or gets that, and then it stokes them out because they receive their Kendama, like, you are putting out, and Charles, right now, like, people at the warehouse now are putting out their love into every single box because they care about it, you know?
Yeah, that's also cool because, like, Kendama, you say, like, it is a corporation,
mm-hmm.
you know? And all the stuff, or some of the stuff, at least, is shipped over from China. So when you think about it, a lot of companies that do that, like, they don't care about what they're actually sending out. It's just like, let's get this in, let's get this out, let's, like, make money. But Kendama is not that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, there's obviously a business side to it, but, like, every single Kendama, you have to realize, like, a bead has been tied on by a person, or,
mm-hmm.
like, it was actually, like, put in a box, or, like, even, you know, signed by somebody, or there is just way more personal, like, way more,
there's sentimental,
like,
value.
Yeah, there's way
to
more,
everything.
Like, sentimental value that goes
yeah.
into, like, these products, even though they're coming from China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it doesn't even matter at that point. So...
yeah, absolutely.
Down
yeah.
to the shape of every company.
Exactly, yeah.
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 Beyond that, I mean, I'm really connected to, like, earth and whatnot. And, I mean, you're playing with wood. You're playing with
mm-hmm.
the earth. So, I mean, the earth is, like, giving you energy. And then it's, like, being offered to be shaped by, like, a craftsman. And then, like, from
mm-hmm.
China all the way
mm-hmm.
over to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And then from those hands to the next hands. And then maybe that Dama's given away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's, like, how many...
And we talked about this in the podcast that you did in episode 2, and, like, you can look at a Kendama and you can see, like, how long it's been alive.
How old, like, this
or that's even, like, a fraction of it.
Yeah,
if
that's,
think
like,
about
just
it,
part
but, like,
of
you have
that
an
piece
idea
of,
like, this thing's, like, this old, you know?
We've got, you know, 12 years of wood just in this
yeah.
ken.
Yeah.
You know?
Could be more, you know? Could be even more.
Yeah. So, both of you guys have pro models for Kendama USA, and I kind of just wanted to talk about, like, because you had one of the first pro models...
yeah.
ever made, like, in Kendama in history.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, what, how does it feel to have a pro model, and like, what does it mean to you, and how does it help you like spread Kendama?
I mean, it was an honor. Like, it was, I remember when Jero first sent out that email, that was 2010, I want to say. And yeah, it was an honor. Like, it's to be one of the first, I think the first company to do a pro model in Kendama. And yeah, it was pretty special. And I feel like we had an opportunity to kind of start something, and we took advantage of it. And we really related it to like ski culture and skate culture. And at least that's what we tried to do. And yeah, I feel like
it worked.
It really worked. Like, yeah, the idea of a pro model, it respects the player, it helps the players. It's, I don't know, it's I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
and you were actually the first person I saw like in a pro video, like my first video. You were in my first video.
Right on.
The seeds being planted, and those seeds blossom into a, you know, your first pro mod.
You were the videos that I was watching when I was getting into it, like you, Colin, Zach, Alex Roush.
There wasn't many people to
Nicholas
watch and look
Schofer,
up to. So.
Yeah.
And dude, I had a blast doing all that. That was some of the golden years, like filming those edits was so fun.
Watching your edit and like seeing the things that you were doing was like, how is that possible? And now it's like second nature to most kids.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy.
It's amazing to see the progression, honestly.
Yeah, what about you, Dave? How did it feel when you got your first pro model?
It was definitely like super, super emotional for me. Mm-hmm. From when we released it, we were in New York during Toy Fair. And we just finished the packaging. It was all, you know, perfect and displayed at the fair and stuff. And we had just released the video online, like February 12th or something like that. I don't really remember the date, but I just remember like it finally being released, and like it went public, and like we made the announcement, and I just remember like kind of like putting my head down and like having to leave the booth with everyone in it. Like everyone was like congratulating me, this and that, you know. And I remember sitting there and just ending up leaving and going outside and like having to take a deep breath and sitting down and just like bawling my eyes out. I was literally just crying of joy, really.
Yeah, of course.
But at the same time, I was asking myself like, do I deserve this? Do I truly deserve this? You know, like, did I earn this? Did I really truly earn it? Like, be honest with yourself. And I just remember just being, I was like, dude, you should be happy for yourself. You did it. And I remember calling my mom and like, it's finally done. I did it. Like, mom, like, look, I have something. Like, this is something that we can show people. Like, we are making a mark, you know, like we're leaving, like we're inspiring. We're doing it, you know, we're doing it. We're inspiring people, like, and like what the Kendama means, like every single thing on here, it means something, you know, to get the impossible, to attain something, to focus on something, to have intention towards something, anything that you put your mind to, you can absolutely have if you truly want it, but you have to go and get it. Like you can't just sit there and think about it. Every breath and every step has to have intention. And that goes for anybody that lives here on this planet. Like, you can have whatever it is you want. You just got to go and get it.
Every breath and every step, like,
intention.
Moving
forward.
Intention.
Yeah. Positively,
yeah.
I would hope, you know.
That makes me, I want to hear what, just expanding more, like, I like what you're going with this, but the dream catcher on there, you know, catching your dreams. Like, what does that mean when the dream falls through, or when you actually catch the dream, you know? Is it all part of the positive growth? Like Kaizen, you know, is a failure. I guess I'm asking a lot of questions, but you know, how does the dream catcher really sit with you on that Kendama, and then expanding on that maybe?
I mean, everybody has dreams, right? Everyone has dreams. Everyone has aspirations. While you're going for that, while you're trying to attain that, there's gonna be failures. There's gonna be mistakes. There's gonna be something that's gonna try and block you. And from one of my mentors today, he said something to me like, stop understanding things, meaning like, don't understand and like, look up at it and try to understand it. Instead, overcome it. Step over it. What is the next obstacle? Your dreams are always going to be there. But what are you doing to get there?
Right.
You know, are you going to let something stop you? Are you going to let one mistake stop you? Are you going to let the next obstacle stop you, or are you going to continue? Because whether or not you get to that dream, and you die before you get there, the world's still going to keep on spinning.
Yeah.
But how are you portraying that to others to help them go for theirs?
Yeah.
That's the message.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing to tell others to be creative to get what they want instead of falling into our so-called system?
Mm. Yeah.
Because we always hear, like, it's designed. Like, the chair, like, this chair is designed to make us, like, not do the things that we're meant to do. Mm-hmm. We are a resilient species. Mm-hmm. We're meant to create. We're meant to do things.
Yeah.
We're not meant to sit in front of a screen for 8 hours a day. We're not supposed to be sleeping 8 hours a night.
Yeah.
You rest when you want. You get up and you do what you want.
Yeah. Do you think Kendama in that way is going to be, like, a huge thing for the younger generation?
Absolutely.
Because, like, I mean, there's...
Because every single kid that we
yeah.
give this to, once they pick this up and they give it a try, they are continuously creating. And they don't even realize it yet.
Yeah.
Wait until they find something that they're passionate about. And then they apply the same energy that they put into Kendama, into their hardest trick, into what they absolutely love
yeah.
with passion.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the thing about Kendama is, like, it's not just one skill because it transfers over to everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like climbing for me. Like,
anything.
Same thing. Just,
yeah.
like, being mindful and, like, what you're doing and, like, actually focus on, like, the movements. And, like, you know, we were talking about this with you with skiing.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, can you tell us about how, like,
yeah,
Kendama's translated to skiing for you?
Just the idea of being able to get away from everything and skiing, and, like, it's like a complete, I don't know, separation from reality. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's a good way to get away, and the more I ski, the more I'm inspired to play Kendama, I guess. And yeah, I don't know. It's just it's my way of getting away.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Would you consider, instead of getting away, that you're actually plugging in to, like, the
yeah,
present?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I would see that. Like, I'm tuning into what I'm passionate about. It's something that I want to do until the day I die, and yeah.
And that's what
and
matters.
Yeah, and that's my passion. That's what
yeah.
I love. And the fact that inspires my Kendama play is something that I, like, almost lost. Like, I almost
mm-hmm.
lost that connection.
Yeah.
And because, you know, when I was doing Kendama full-time, I wasn't skiing as much. And I think I've found, like, a really good balance, like, since I've taken a break. Like, I've got to ski, and that actually makes me want to play Kendama a lot
mm.
more.
Yeah. Yeah, you should never feel forced. Like, you're not going to be inspired if you feel forced
yeah,
or, like, obligated
course.
To do
mm-hmm.
something.
But
so whatever that is that inspires you, just
absolutely.
Send it. yeah. So I also want to talk about, like, Spike Hard Catch Low and that, like, the brand of yours and
mm-hmm.
like, how you came up with that and what inspired that and what do you plan to do with it?
You also put it on the bird?
Yeah.
The perch?
On the bird.
Yeah.
Spike Hard Catch Low, how do you carry Kendama style? Like, mainly it's like we watch a lot of people play. I mean, a lot of people are actually playing now, like super high and super
yeah.
low, you know. But before, when I was playing, I mean, I remember watching, and it was only in one area, you know. And I have a dance background. I like, when you hear about someone that break dances, you're like, oh, get down, you
yeah.
know, like, get down, like, go to the floors, show some style, do your thing, you know, flow with it, show some flavor. And, like, having a dance background and applying that to Kendama, that was, like, part of what Spike Hard Catch Low became. And actually, when Spike Hard Catch Low came up, it was, I remember playing the way that I played, and then Jake was like, dude, like, that's so crazy, I like how you, like, spike hard, and I like how you, like, you, and you catch low, like, you catch as low as possible, and it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And really, like, the reason why I wanted to play that way was I didn't want to be like everybody else. I want to play differently, and that's what caused me to move the way that I moved. But having a dance background helped with that.
Of course.
Having, like, a musical background helped with that, and it just, I did what felt good. I was genuinely doing what felt good for me and what I enjoyed doing, and that's what ended up coming out. Yeah.
I feel like it was so influential too, because since you were one of the first players in the U.S. You were the first person to, like, branch out into a style that wasn't just, like, regular Kendama play. And so I think that's why you caught the eyes of so many people, and so many people were inspired by you. It's like, oh, it doesn't have to be this, like, rigid, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, fast, like, precise thing. Like, and same with you, you know?
Well,
like,
you, and I mean, Dave, you inspired my, like, flow. Like, I feel like you were one of the first people that tapped into, like, the flow, like, the dance. You know, EG's, like, got, like, a
is unreal, man.
And, you know, there'll be a day when we'll have choreographed Kendama competitions. I know, maybe it's 25
sure.
years, 20, 10 years, but
why not?
I foresee it. But yeah, man, the influence of the flow, that, you know, listening to yourself and seeing this box and like maybe feeling contained by that box, but not feeling contained and knowing that you can expand infinitely beyond that and do things that, you know, haven't been done yet. You just have to try and explore and fail and learn that each attempt is an opportunity to grow and to, you know, continue to inspire yourself. So going back, you said that referencing music and dance, like, which did you find first? Did you find music? Did you find dance? Did you find kendama first?
Give us a timeline.
Let's see. Okay. I didn't start... I mean, getting into music was, like... My first instrument ever was, like, the piano. Like, being in a Filipino household, like, my parents had a piano, and they were, like, in hopes, like, oh, dude, play. Go play. Like, we had, like, a tutor that came in to teach us how to play, and I would just, like, kind of dabble, but I never paid attention to, like, reading or, like, learning notes. I would, like, play what I heard, and that was my way of learning. And it's the same with, like, visual. Like, I learn visually, and I learn how to play music by hearing. I don't know how to read music at all. So if you give me a guitar and, like, play a song, I can, like, dabble around a little bit and figure it out and kind of, like, get the gist of where to play. But I got into music, like, my first true instrument was, like, it was a saxophone, and I was, like, in fourth grade or something like that. And then, like, I stopped playing the saxophone, and I kept on going, and I got into, like, playing the drums. And then in high school is when I picked up the guitar. The guitar I excelled a lot in because it was very convenient. I was able to take it with me everywhere. And I would do the same thing, listen to music that I really enjoyed, and I'd try to play it. And then there would be other people at school that played, and I would jam. Like, when I went to college, I did not go to class. I mean, the only class I went to was my music jam classes because that's what I enjoyed. And that was the only class that I got an A in. And when it was time for me to go to my other classes, I would just go to the library in the lobby, and I would sit down and I would play my guitar. And I would play guitar for like I didn't even know it, but like people were walking by, and like I was playing for the people walking to their next class and giving them like an enjoyable experience. But in reality, I was just sitting there like, I was in my own zone, like, just doing what I want. And then eventually there was another guy that ended up playing with me, and we became really good friends. And then, like, it was so crazy because this, like, the college I was going to, the community college, ended up hiring us for, like, one of their events at the, like, at the school, which was really cool.
So I'm already seeing a pattern. Finding what you love to do, what's intrinsically motivating.
Absolutely.
Doing that beyond all, like, limits of what people tell you to do. And then you find community there that someone else loves that same thing, and you get creative with that, and then you get...
And then it just gives
you... It keeps blossoming.
Yeah.
You find what you love, and you keep watering that seed, and it grows
exactly.
Like a beautiful plant.
Yeah.
And then you start eating that, and you're nourished by it.
No, I'm serious. Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. Like, you find something that you love, you do it for free, and eventually, out of nowhere, it just pays you. Like, if you do what you love, that's what matters. Because people are seeing that you're doing what you love. What does that do? It tells the next person to do what they love, too.
Yeah.
And then you will ultimately get to where you need to be. Not where you want to be, where you need to be.
There's a question that changed my life that I want to offer. And it's... What would have to happen 1 year from today in order for you to have the most successful and fulfilling year yet? And what if you asked yourself that question every single year when you got back to that point?
Yeah.
And it really comes down to just doing what I love as much as possible. And like we were just expressing, like, it's going to continue to expand and blossom, and different branches are going to go in different directions that you maybe even never knew about. That's going to offer a new outlet. What would make this next year the best and most successful, fulfilling year yet for you?
Honestly, like, there's nothing that I can label that I would want. Really is, like, if I wake up tomorrow and I'm happy, just like what you said, if I'm happy, if I wake up tomorrow and I'm doing what I love, that's what matters. Like, I just feel like I'm repeating your question, but... It really is just like, if you do what you love, that is the pinpoint, the passion. It's what, I mean, tomorrow it could change. Like, I can be like, I don't want to play kendama, and then I want to continue with music out of nowhere, you know? But I'll always love kendama. Like, I know that this is already part of my life because it's changed it. I would not be where I am right in this now if it weren't for kendama. if it weren't for Kendama Yusei, if it weren't for Turner playing Kendama,
yeah.
if it weren't for getting on the phone with you,
yeah.
you know, like, I am here for a reason.
Yeah.
I think you're here for a reason. I believe that there's a reason why Molly ended up getting a management, like, training today, and, like, you're here. There's some weird, odd, like...
Cookie crumbs of the universe, man.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Like, this wave of energy is bringing certain people together.
Turner.
What surprise is this? Like, there's a whole entire reason for this, you yeah. know? Like, yeah. we don't know what it is yet, but how do you feel being here?
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, to give a little context to the listeners, I'm pretty much on a road trip for the next month or so. And yeah, I was driving up the California coast, and I hit up Haley. I said, "Hey, I'm gonna be in Oregon. Can I sleep on your couch?" And I show up, and she's like, "Yeah, Dave's gonna be here in a day."
I was like, "Stay for
so
2 days.
Why don't you stay?
Just
so,
stay and hang out."
Yeah, the timing just it couldn't have been better. Yeah,
impeccable.
Pretty rad.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
Yep. Synchronistic.
Yeah, and then.
Yeah.
But how would you say like your well-being feels? Like, do you feel happy
I feel great.
In the moment?
Yeah.
And
it's
that's
like exactly
all
like
that matters.
What Josh was diving into is just do it what makes you happy every day. And yeah, I don't have like.
And sometimes, like in your case, like doing nothing is like doing something, like more
perfect.
Than you even realize,
yeah.
you like know? All,
yeah.
Like it's okay to like not have like a set mm-hmm. home at the time or not have
exactly.
a job at the time. Like it's okay to just like
yeah, you know?
Get in your car and drive up the coast. Like,
and enjoy what's exactly
wrong with
right
that.
In front of you.
Yeah. And yeah. I, you know, I worked really hard all winter and skied really hard to like save up money and make this
yeah.
happen. And so.
Yeah, he made it happen.
Yeah, and I don't know, you think about something long enough, it'll eventually happen, so.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes is from Napoleon Hill, is if the mind can conceive it and believe it, it can achieve it. And the way I like to consider is if you can perceive it, you know, imagine the dream and believe it enough to try again and again and again in the face of failure and learning from that belief and continuing to believe, you know, you'll eventually achieve that. And if you don't, it's an opportunity to transcend your original vision. Maybe there's something even better like waiting for you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is it really failure though?
You know, is it really failure? Like, is a great question because
yeah.
I think
because it's a it's the way you look at it.
Yeah. We've just been conditioned in the way that I've been taught through mindfulness practices. It's, you know, we're working with neuroplasticity. We're working with redesigning our conditioned mind, our conditioned mm-hmm. perceptions that we've been raised with. So, you know, it gives you the opportunity to practice open-mindedness. Like, you know, you maybe have heard that term. That's
yeah.
the idea of just not being totally set on one idea and not being totally biased on one idea and literally just being able to be open to the mm-hmm. experience, open to the thoughts that are going through your mind and being able to filter through it all to really create what is true to you and bring that to life.
Yeah. Do you think Kendama, like, I mean, I guess this is a question for you, but do you think Kendama, like, helps you channel that? Because it is, like...
Absolutely.
It's like a meditative, like, it can be meditative once you get, like, into the rhythm of playing Kendama. But
absolutely.
Do you think it helps, like, lessen the thoughts that are going through your head or amplifies it?
I don't think it lessens it. What I notice in my own experience, both in meditation, sitting, walking, gardening, as well as Kendama meditation, of just grinding a trick for an hour or two, is when I'm really deep and I'm trying to focus on going slow, so I'm having quality repetitions each attempt. You know, you don't necessarily, like Ben Harrell just said this in the last episode too, it's like you don't want, you know, a like overwhelming quantity of attempts, you want quality attempts.
Right.
And I live by that because, you know, it's giving you the best opportunity for the trick. But talking about the meditation and the thoughts going through the mind, you're going to have thoughts that are like maybe what you might be having thoughts that are in the future, like what is this going to look like when I land on film, like I really want to see this on film. You could be thinking about like an argument that you just had, you know, and when that happens in the practice, it's the opportunity to just notice that you're thinking about the future or notice that you're thinking about the past and just hone back in.
Yeah,
it's okay that just happened, but you're training and you're directing your awareness that you're already in this activity, but your mind is somewhere else. And so you're like, okay, that just happened. Note, you know, coming back to the coming back to the present.
Yeah.
Which inspires me to ask Dave a question, actually, because when you said that your pro release at Toy Fair was really emotional, you're sitting on the curb, you're joyfully crying, but what I heard you mention is like you had some self-talk occur. Mm-hmm. There was like, you know, do I really deserve this? You're checking yourself. Like, did I really do all the work for this? And I don't even know the question I want to ask you, but just maybe like tapping back into that experience, like how do you work with your self-talk when your mind is saying like, I don't deserve this, I'm not good enough, I can't land this trick? Even if those thoughts just occur, how do you shape those?
Those are thoughts of self-doubt. Mm-hmm. And doubt is a made-up word. If we can release that from, or unlearn that, anything negative, like doubt, self-hate, whatever, like, if we can eliminate the word doubt, period, from yourself, from everybody else, how much more can you get done?
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's what I'd have to do. I have to dig back in and realize that it's myself doubting myself. Mm-hmm. And if you don't own up to that either, though, you're only going to tear yourself down.
Yeah.
Because you have to be proud of what you have accomplished through the passions and the love that you've done with, whether it was Kendama, Click Clack Radio, Peace Sticks, skiing. It doesn't matter what it is. You have to own and love what you have done from your present in order to be happy in your now. And in order to release and give that to others. Unless we are, every single one of us do that, there's always going to be a little bit of something holding back.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
But if you truly understand yourself and really love what you have accomplished, you can then truly love and share that with others.
Yeah.
You have to own who you are.
You have to recognize that's a possibility before you can even, like, mm-hmm. start doing that, you know? Like, I mean, like, for me, because I can relate with, like, the, like, self-doubt, like, mm-hmm. negative self, when I'm filming, especially, because, like, mm-hmm. there's something about filming that I'm like, this just, like...
But what happens in the end? What happens in the end?
Well, usually.
You land. Yeah, you usually land it, right?
But, like, I don't know. It's inspiring to hear that, like, oh, it's, like, an option to, like, not beat yourself up about
there,
it.
There, you just said you know? It. It's the option.
Yeah.
You have the ability.
It's the choice, too.
It's the choice, yeah, the option or the choice. But it's really up to you to really make that choice to either move. And it's, there's no, like, 70-30. It's 50-50. It's truly 50-50. It's either you decide to make it better or you decide to want to work to make things better for yourself, or you can just, like, kind of lukewarm and, like, I'll just wait till tomorrow. I'll wait till tomorrow. Absolutely. Maybe I can go this way. But the cool thing about it is, like, even if you're feeling that way, you can always go this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, you have to decide to do that.
I'd also say that's where it really becomes a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the most beautiful things I find about Kendama. It's offering thousands upon thousands of people around the world who maybe their practice was playing video games, or I'm not bashing video games, I grew up playing video games.
Yeah.
But it's a wooden video game that has an unlimited amount of levels to explore, an infinite amount of potential. You can create your own levels, create games.
You have, like, so many lives.
It's mine. So many lives. You have almost infinite lives.
Batteries will never die.
Until it breaks.
Yeah. Totally.
And then you have glue.
Yeah.
There's options. But, you know, it's like, it's a beautiful thing to have a practice, because the practice brings the opportunity to direct awareness and direct how we're internally... recognizing our experience. In other words, how we're identifying with what we're telling ourselves, how we're listening to the self-doubt, the self-talk. And when that self-doubt comes in with more practice, it literally, that you're not listening. Yeah. You're being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a beautiful Jedi practice.
Yeah.
Wax on.
But also it's important to not, like, push those feelings away. Because, like, that's something that I found was so significant about, like, doing yoga. Because, like, I used to do it quite a bit, like, with my mom and, like, you know, and they would always say, like, yeah, whatever you're feeling, like, don't push it away. Mm-hmm. If it's bad, it's negative, like, sad, whatever it is, mm-hmm. like, that's fine. Just, like, don't hold on to it.
It's absolutely okay to be angry and to be sad.
Yeah. It's
to be frustrated.
Human.
It's, like, one of my favorite things.
It's natural.
It's
human.
Unnatural not to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of my favorite things about Kendama is the fact that there is so much failure involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, you know, whenever we would do events and stuff, you'd see kids, like, they can't land a trick. They get frustrated. And I say, good. Like, you need to learn how to fail, like, before you succeed.
Every champion knows what it feels like to lose.
Yeah, and I feel like in our generation, everything is just so, it's given, it's so easy. I could turn my phone on, Amazon, buy something, and it's there the next day. It's like everything's immediate, there's immediate gratification.
Yep.
A lot of, you know, our society now, and I feel like Kendama is definitely something that you have to work towards. You're not going to pick it up and be good at it. You've got to fail a lot before you.
There's an expectation that like it should happen like that because of like the way that our society is.
A little bit, yeah.
Come so quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I just like the fact that I feel like the fact that you can't do it for so long is kind of the, I don't know, it's the beauty of it.
Down.
Yeah. It's so hard to, you know.
No, for sure. That's a really good point.
It's a little check on you.
Yeah.
And that's also why I'm sure you've shared, I've seen both of you share first experience spikes, you know. And I'd actually maybe want to dive into a couple stories with you because I know the power and the experience, both like reward chemical-wise in your brain, neurologically, what's released when you achieve something and you actually get that gratification. Oh, my package from Amazon just got here. I feel great. I'm all doped up on dopamine. Like, I feel great. Got my new dress. I'm going out tonight. You know, but Kendama gives that similar experience because when you fail over and over and over and over again and you finally get that spike, you have a release and your body feels good. That is the moment that we can transform our perceptions about what's possible because you're flexible. Your mind is flexible at that moment. You have chemicals that are released. Like, that's how neuroplasticity works. So maybe if you can think of one, like, what has been like the first experience that comes to your mind of sharing a spike, like one of the highlight moments of that first spike. What was that story like? Either one of you first.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah, there's a whole lot.
Thousands.
I mean, at every event we go to, or every contest, like even just walking down the street, like someone's gonna try it and someone's gonna get pumped. Like,
is there
that's
one
a guarantee.
That sticks
so
out?
Yeah, that's a tough question.
One
it's
that,
a good question.
Sticks. Oh, okay. All right. All right. You
no,
want to go first?
No.
Okay.
How about it?
I've had a lot of these experiences being in the show or being part of the Jabberwocky show in Prism in Las Vegas when I was still performing with them. And there's one part of the show where I would end up selecting someone random in the crowd, and sometimes it would be someone that has never, ever picked up a kendama. Mind you, I cannot speak when I have this mask on.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I'm showing these people, I'm showing this person in front of 850 people or 830 people. There's one person that has never touched a kendama ever in their entire life, and I'm sitting here, I give them three chances only, and I explain to them on how to do it without speaking and by gestures, straight miming.
Mm.
And there will be times when they are completely way off, and there are actually times when they would get it, sometimes the first try. And when that happens, the amount of like energy and happiness that everybody else in the crowd has is unexplainable. Like, mm-hmm. You just feel this surge, and it's just like, whoa, and this person, yes! Like, that is the reaction. There's like, whoa, like, I did this, like, what? I can't believe it. And then me, I'm still trying to not talk, and I'm like, like, what? Like, in my mind, that's my reaction,
yeah.
You know? And then to be able to do that just shows if there is some kind of like dedication or like motivation or determination to do something to get to the happiness that you want.
Yeah.
It's right in
no,
front of you.
No, that's
yeah.
Like the cool thing about it is like you don't have to talk to teach
you
kendama.
You don't.
Because I experienced this and I want to hear your spike story too, but this made me think of like, you know, the not talking about it and teaching someone kendama. Because I went to Thailand with Kenzaki-san from Kit Corporation and mm-hmm. a couple of their company people and TJ. And we were just like touring around some, I don't know, random like tourist thing when we were there. And there was a school, like a school, probably, I don't know, 15, 20 kids that were maybe elementary, getting into middle school. So they're super young. Didn't speak much English, but they were learning English. So they approached us because, you know, obviously, like, stick out like a sore thumb in Thailand. And they were asking us questions to try to, like, ask us our name in English because they were trying to learn. And we had kendamas, obviously. And we were trying to teach them how to, like, spike and big cup, but we couldn't, like, translate that. We could say, like, my name is this, my name is that. But we couldn't be, like, do the big cup because it would make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't even talking. But, like, three of the kids got spike, like, a bunch of them got big cup, and they were all just so pumped. Like, I don't know, it's just cool because you don't have to actually talk to somebody to
Absolutely.
Do it. You can just be, like, you know, and, like, motion and, like, give them thumbs
play.
Up and, like,
you don't
you
have
know,
to
gesture.
Communicate
you
to
don't.
Play.
You don't.
Yeah. It's, like, one of the coolest things about kendama, I think. Anyone can learn it.
Makes it universal.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, okay, what's your story? I want to hear it.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's been, like you were saying, there's so many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so hard to, like, pinpoint one. Oh, man, that's tough. I do remember there was one that kind of sticks out in my mind. It was in Utah. It was a little girl. She couldn't have been. I'm pretty sure her mom said she was five. Mm-hmm. And I remember they kept, like, taking the Dhamma from her. Like, no, you're going to hurt yourself. You're going to hurt yourself. And she, like, kept grabbing him off the table. And eventually, they were like, all right, fine. And she eventually got Big Cup. And that was the youngest person I've ever seen. So it's not a Spike story, but everyone was just, like, kind of blown away.
Same thing,
like,
though.
Jeez,
yeah.
Like, barely talk. And she knew, like, what she wanted. Was dialed in. Like, she yeah. wanted it. And she got it. It's pretty cool.
So, yeah, that makes me think.
Remember that.
I was trying to, like, think of one specifically, too. And it's hard to, like, pinpoint one. There's a couple stories that come to mind, but what really is my favorite experience, it's interesting saying this, but it's when people say that I would never be able to do that. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know,
like,
and I'm like,
try it.
What is the best that can happen if you simply just try it for 60 seconds? It's like selling Kendama to someone, I guess, in a way, but it's getting them just, I'm selling them to play. You know, play this, try it for 60 seconds. I bet you'll surprise yourself. And the moment that they get it, whether it was the first try or it was on the last try of that 60 seconds, like, that moment just totally changed potentially what they thought to be possible for themselves. Like, right. What else are you telling yourself that you can or cannot do? This little toy just showed you that you're maybe telling yourself, like, the wrong thing or mm-hmm. the opposite thing.
Totally.
Maybe not the wrong thing, but you're telling yourself that you can. You're listening. You're feeding yourself that. You can.
Opens up so many possibilities.
You can.
For people, yeah.
You can.
You can do
you
it.
You can do it.
You can do it. Can damn it.
Okay, so I do also want to talk about you pretty much started the first ever Kendama camp. NKR. Was it the first?
NKR, yes, I believe.
Okay, National Kendama Retreat 2015? It was 2015, I think.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wanted to talk about, like, backstory on how you got the idea, what you thought it would do, what was your, like, motive with a Kendama camp?
The idea for not just NKR, but, like, Kendama camp in general, mm-hmm. was actually spawned in the first Roots tour. People were talking about it. You know, I remember Zach and Jake, everyone calling, like, everybody. Speaking of Colin is calling us on the telephone.
We're gonna have
right
to answer
now.
This.
Yeah, answer right. it.
Hello, Colin.
Colin Sander, we were just. Speaking of you, and then you end up calling. We are currently in Click Clack Radio
yeah,
interview session.
Live.
You're live right now.
We live and direct right now. Radio man.
What do you have to say for our viewers, Colin?
I have to say I just got off a hour and a half phone call with some obscure, progressive, epic potential Dhamma world dreams, goals, etc. So you never know. Something sick might come out down the road, but, you know, I'm grinding.
Man, I just had a Kendama dream last night, so I don't know if you were dreaming Dhamma last night too, but
Jossie had a dream.
Good to have you in the studio, my friend. We were just talking about the beginnings of NKR and Roots Tour, so
NKR is just like insane. NKR was like the exact thing that Kendama needed at that time, which was like bringing it more to like the whole community element and just getting a bunch of people together where you don't have to worry about schedules, where people are staying, anything else. It's just like full immersion, and there really wasn't anything like that at the time when NKR, like the first one, happened. And
right.
Yeah, now it's just like
he just answered
that's
the question.
That's how you got to do it.
Well, it's beautiful that you just chimed in. You know, the universe is really working with us. You know, you just
phenomenal.
Answered this question. So, do we have any questions for Colin?
Ooh.
Colin, I have a question for you. I have a question.
Do
for
I
you,
love
Colin.
Click Clack Radio? Yes.
No.
Yes.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, man, mm-hmm. but. Would you be down June 9 to the 11th, be the unicorn, and become one of the counselors?
Oh my god, Colin,
for
do it.
Weekend in the Woods.
Yo, I want to pop in, I want to say what up, want to make an appearance, but here's the thing. The weekend before Weekend in the Woods is my brother's bachelor party up in Mammoth, so that's going to be a little rowdy. / I'm going to be away from
but
Tory
that has
for a
nothing
couple
to do with that other weekend.
No, it's more of like the Tory. It's more of like the Tory life. But before that, 2, I'm going on like a 2-night adventure deep in the mountains, and like basically I'm not going to be allowed out of the house on that weekend, probably.
Okay, well, we're going to kidnap you. We're going to sand map you.
I will call Tori.
I'll pop in for like an evening. I'll come say hi from like whatever, 2-3 p.m. till like 10, but I can't like fully be there for the whole thing.
All right. Make That's good enough for me, man. That's good enough for me.
I will definitely come say hi. Like,
there you
go.
If
you're doing a weekend in the woods, like, I will see you. Maybe it'll be the sat, maybe it'll be the sun, but like, I'll come through.
There you have it. Colin Sander.
Colin Sander,
everybody.
At Weekend in the Woods. Come and see the unicorn.
Remember when I popped into NKR last time?
Yeah, I remember.
For like 3 hours.
So
that was awesome.
What I have a question. What's the biggest benefit of having a Kendama retreat like, you know, Weekend in the Woods, NKR?
I mean, honestly, probably the biggest benefit is it's just like, it's the committing nature of being like, all right, we're here to play Kendama, to get better at Kendama. You've got all these people around you who, you know, basically they keep the hype alive. They give you trick tips. It's kind of like you just get that momentum and that energy of a bunch of different people that are all really, like, committed for those few days. So it's not like your average, like, oh, let's just have a session with some homies that lasts 2 or 3 hours. It's like we're going to get immersive and fully, like, breakthrough to new levels of Dom that we, like, haven't reached yet.
Absolutely.
So probably, I would say the immersion element, for sure. Because it's like, when you're just at home or you're at a friend's, you're not going to be like, we are playing Dama for 12 hours straight, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's nuts, though.
It's fully immersed.
I definitely want to get my Slack game on, too, and improve that. And, you know, there's so many other things that people can kind of learn and experience at these, like, retreats, that it's more just the whole balance and, like, skill culture, and not just Kendama, but, like, you know, having fun learning other challenges as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's continuing to push the mind, body, spirit, and soul of every one of our beings. So, well, thanks for the surprise call. We're gonna I think we might have to give you a call after the interview.
Yeah, we'll call you back.
Yeah, have fun, finish out your show. Good to hear from you guys. Just hit me whenever. Have fun up there.
Beautiful. Sander out.
Bye, Colin.
Love you, Colin.
Peace out, geez.
Bye, Haley. Bye, Dave.
See ya.
Oh, Turner's here.
And Turner,
yo. Brother.
Alright, peace out,
guys. Alright, later.
But where the idea, like, came from was actually Roots Tour. Turner was there. I remember Turner talking about it. We were at, what was that place called? The skate place? Wendell's? Is it called Wendell's? We were at Wendell's, and we were, like, talking about Kendama Camp. But it just never ended up happening.
Yeah.
And then NKR happened.
And then it did?
Yeah, and then we did. And then I just put forth the intention with at the time it was Keith Cristobal, and then we did it for 2 years, and then now he's doing it with Sweets, and then I'm doing Weekend in the Woods. Like, there's more than one camp. There's like 103 Dama Camp in Japan. There's Camp Dama happening in Minnesota. There's Weekend in the Woods happening. The fact that there's 3 different ones is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's
because
spreading.
It's spreading the awareness. So we can't ask for more. Oh, June 9th to the 11th.
June 9th through 11th. Where's that?
It's going to be in Angeles Oaks, California. You can get your tickets at weekendinthewoodsretreat.com.
Yeah, we'll put a link below.
Please do.
We will. We definitely will.
We have Josh is one of our counselors. I can go through the list, but just visit the site. You'll see all the names.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, also you have some, like, really cool stuff to give away to people that get tickets this year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it.
We have Weekend in the Woods canteens. Water is life. So you can have one of these water bottles only if you attend there.
Canteen.
Yeah, I like that, Josh. Canteen. And an actual camper bag. It's got a laptop pocket. I mean, it's a
super
sick...
It comes with a laptop?
No. It comes with a laptop pocket.
Ah.
Not that that's supposed to sell you on anything, but it's not about that. These are just a few of the things that you're able to receive when you're there.
Yeah, they are
we
really
also
cool.
have, like, a custom
made by Kendama USA, Weekend in the Woods, Tama.
Awesome.
And we're going to be making some hats, which is going to be super, super sick. I'm super excited about.
Nice.
What else? Yeah, we still have tickets out. Go and grab them if you want to be part of it. It's going to be a great time. There's going to be a lot of high energy there. The area that we're going to be playing Kendama is called the Arc Room. It's this huge gymnasium in the middle of the woods, and then we'll be moving that outside. There's over 13 cabins that we can use. The place is much bigger than the last retreat where we had. Everywhere is paved, so you can drive up there much easier than going through dirt. So overall, it's just a better venue, a better place. It's going to be phenomenal. Just be there.
Super excited for
it. Gets you guys. It's going to be really fun.
Super excited for it. This kind of expands going away from Weekend in the Woods, but I'm curious where you see the Kendama community and Kendama in the world in the next 20 years. Like, where, if you could have put an imaginational bubble on where you think Kendama will be in 20 years after seeing its exponential growth so far.
Over the past, well, you've been playing for seven years?
It's going to be... It's already global, but I feel like soon, I feel like it's going to happen within the next couple years where everyone is going to know what Kendama is, like yo-yo. Everyone knows what a yo-yo is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like almost every single person knows what a yo-yo is.
Household name.
It's a household, household name. I think Kendama will be within, I don't know, I'll throw a number out there, 5 years. It's possible for it to become a household name. Like, everyone will know what a kendama is.
Yes.
Like in Japan.
How
like
do you
in
think
Japan.
You go about doing that?
Awareness.
Not you specifically.
Awareness.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take everyone in the kendama community to actually put forth energy and intention to putting it into other people's hands. I mean, let people be curious about it. That's what Jake would always say. Like, people are genuinely curious about what this is. If they see you playing, they're like looking like, what's that? You know? Let them be curious, but don't hold it to yourself. Yeah. Like, if you see that they're curious, if somebody walks by you and you see that they're curious, share. Sharing's caring. We always hear that, right? Just share it. What's the worst that can happen? They can say no.
What's the best that could happen?
Yeah, what's the best? Yeah, what's the best that can happen? It's just going to get into that person's hand. What's the best that can happen from that? That person can put into another person's hand. It's wildfire.
Yeah, I think you just answered the question that I was going to ask next, and that's, you know, in what you just said of, you know, Kendama spreading globally, like, I was going to ask, what would you invite the Kendama community at large to focus on in a way of how to do that? And I think you've touched on that of not holding to yourself, being open, being vulnerable to share, to push yourself beyond your comfort zone.
When you are out of your own comfort zone, that's when you're really growing. If you're comfortable on where you're at, that means you're not getting better at whatever it is that you want to do. Yeah. You always have to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation.
There's another quote that's, you know, if your dream does not scare the living dickens out of you, then you're not dreaming big enough. You know.
I like that.
Censored for click clack.
And it's not like, it's not even that you're scared. It's the way you feel inside is like, it's excitement. It's not, my friend Rock told me this, is like, is it fear? Because fear is another made-up word. Or is it truly excitement? Being excited and the feeling of being scared is actually the same thing. Because what happens to someone if they're getting ready to do like a speech or something like that? Like cold sweats, hands get sweaty, feet are like shaking, your body's like going through this whole thing, you know? But that is pure excitement. That means you're on the way to doing something big.
I have a story to relate to this. It's not Kendama. But
perfect. Then it's a perfect example.
So I was driving home from work a while back, and I drive back on this like rural country road, like absolutely beautiful. And there was this lady walking her bike, just like an older woman. I don't know, maybe 65, probably about 65 years old. Had her thumb out, and I'm like, oh, we'll pick her up. Obviously, like, she's got a bike. She's probably got a flat or something. So I pulled over, got her bike in the car, and we introduced ourselves. And she's like, I just got back from bike touring all through Europe, and I never got one flat, and I get back home, and I get, like, three flats in a week. Like, what the hell, you know? And we're just talking about it. I was like, oh, cool, like, I just did my first bike tour last summer. Like, what did you think? And, like she was telling me all about her experiences biking all through Europe alone. And I was just kind of like, I mean, as, like, a woman, like, was it scared for you to be by yourself, like, in a foreign country, like, you know, like, alone? And she's just like, fear doesn't exist, dude. Like, she's like, what would you do if you had no fear? Like, everyone told me I was brave, but, like, it's not being brave. It's just, like, doing something that, like, makes you pumped. And we just, like, had this awesome conversation, and I dropped her off. Probably will never see her again. But after that, it was just, like, yeah. Like, fear is kind of an illusion.
It is an illusion. That sucks you in. And my friend, my mentor, Anton, told me, he's, like, he calls it his, like, Antonism or whatever. Mm-hmm. But fear is really just feeling everything around reality.
Yeah.
It's not being scared. It's mm-hmm. just knowing whether or not, like, you see a scary alleyway. Yeah, it might look scary, but is it really scary?
It's a story that we make up in our head about the dark alleyway.
Yeah.
It's the story we tell ourselves about the monster under our bed. Another good friend, Jake Ducey, like, always told the story about, you know, fear is what we make up. And, like, you know, if you actually looked under the bed and looked, there's no monster under there. It's like we're creating that fear, that fear, but we're physically feeling that, like, excitement, as you're saying. Energetically, we feel angsty. Our body feels weird. We're, you know, shaking in our bed because we think the boogie monster is going to rip us out of, you know, the sheets.
Mm-hmm.
But we're telling us a story about the alleyway. That fear is illusion.
Yeah.
It's
illusion.
You just got to, like, meet people that remind you that, like, dude, you're fine.
And I actually I had a dream
send
about this
it.
Recently.
Send it.
I had a dream that the message at the end of this dream was, it was a giant, giant bear, like a bear that was like 20 size the size of a normal bear that came around this giant tree, and there was this little baby lion, like, playing. And the message was the bear speaking to the lion, and it said, our duty every day is to remind each other why we're here. And that's what I think community is, like, really about. Like, when we have those doses of, like, fear, of, like, frustration, anger that's real within us, we're not landing a trick and we're throwing our dhammas, and it's like that one brother or sister that's like, it's okay, it's all right, you know, like, try again, let it go as much as you can, like, focus on what you can do to keep going, like, everything's gonna be all right.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
It's like we're here to help each other out. It's another beautiful part about this whole process and why I think we're sitting at this table.
So Jack's outside, we should let him in.
Jack Baker,
I want to let you finish. Yeah. Yo.
Nice, dude.
The camera's died, I think, but I think we're still good.
We're still recording, though.
Cool.
Yesterday, I posted a thing on Click Clack Radio Instagram saying that you're going to be here, and if people had any questions for you. So, we got a couple we want to go through. All right. Okay. Somebody asked, what inspired the Flownamic duo edits with you and Kenyatta, and how much time and effort goes into making those?
Majority of all of our edits that we make all take a weekend. So we'll come through, like, whether it was San Diego or Las Vegas, we'll just get together, film whatever. If we're feeling good, we go to that spot and we do what feels good at that moment. Like, oh, dude, we should go for this. Everything is organic when we make these edits. And the thing that inspired me to tell Kenyatta, like, we should do this, is the fact of sharing. And we see people playing kendama by themselves a lot, but we never see two people using one kendama.
True.
A lot. We don't see it a lot. It happens, but we wanted to portray that. We wanted, and with our, both of our styles, they complement each other so well. And I feel like we are going in an avenue that nobody wants to touch. I mean, we want people to touch it. Like, people are actually doing it now. Panic and John from New York, they're actually doing what we do now.
Yeah.
Which is so dope for me. Like, I'm so happy that that is happening, because it just shows that, like, this is a thing. Like, this is truly a thing. But the fact of two people playing with one kendama, what is that showing?
Collaboration, trust.
Teamwork.
Teamwork, so many things.
I mean, two people playing, that's what mattered to me. It was like, not just one person. If you do it with two people, it's going to spread, like, regardless, because that person is going to go play with another person. They're going to be like, oh, dude, let's do it. What's going to happen after this podcast? Josh wants to do a doubles trick with me. He wants to do a flow trick with me. And what did that spawn from? You were just talking to me about this outside of here, and you said, dude, I want to do a trick. I watched your guys' Flownamic edits, like, I want to do this with you. And you were purely just genuinely inspired to do that. And that actually really makes me happy, because it's happening, you know? Like, it's happening. Maybe it didn't happen right away, but it's happening now.
Totally.
And that makes me happy.
I mean, I can relate with that. Like, the fact that for the first Click Clack Radio, you were the first guest that we had because you're like, I'm going to drive down to Corvallis. You free this week. Like, let's do it. And, like, now you're here, like, co-hosting. Boom. Yeah. Love it.
Absolutely.
I love it.
You know, you feel that intuition, like you see a person on the side of the road with a bike and you want to pick them up. It's that moment that the universe offers us of, like, genuine curiosity. And it's whether or not we shut that down and go the other way. It's that 50-50 choice, you say. It's like
that direction, yeah.
It's either like, yes, what's the best that can happen? I'm going to make myself feel uncomfortable because I have no idea what's going to happen.
Or are you going to
Or I'm just going to feel comfortable and not do it.
Yeah.
So.
All right, this question can go to both of you guys. What is the Dhamma that's at the top of your want list?
Right now, this moment?
Yeah, what do you want?
You can go first if you want.
Just a Dhamma that's always been, like, sought after for me. It's just White Mug.
Ooh.
I'm not about to drop
just
the
so
cash
classic.
On that.
Yeah.
But
do you
but
care
yeah,
if it's brand new, or do you care if it's, like, beat or anything? Like, can it be beat, or do you want it brand new?
I prefer brand new Dhammas, because I like putting my own blood, sweat,
break
and tears
in.
Into
yeah.
it. I like to see how they break in when I play them. But either way, you know, that's just a Dhamma that's always been kind of on the pedestal.
Yeah.
But I'm not actively searching for it. It'll come to me when it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
My current, like, want list is A Netter's new pro mod.
Mm.
I love it. I absolutely love what it stands for.
Yeah.
Like, find your wings, you know, like, his whole theme behind it. It looks super ill. That's what I want right now.
And also, Christian's been in the game
that.
For so
yeah,
long.
Yeah, Christian's been
like,
in it. You know,
yeah.
I want to support him.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
grown so much as a person,
truly.
Too. It's
yeah.
it's
yeah.
really phenomenal to see where he's at in the amount of time that
yeah.
he's put in, you know?
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's
yeah.
it's time for that guy, for sure.
For sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
That was really exciting when he got announced.
Yeah.
yeah, I was pumped for him.
Can I ask one?
See. Of course. A couple of them we actually already even covered. Like, how do you think Kendama will evolve?
Yeah, I think we kind of did that already.
I got one that my good friend asked. Do you think you'll ever go for more than 11 J-sticks?
I'm currently trying to break it right now without telling anyone. I've actually went out on 3 different missions to go for it, and I've hit a bunch of 9s, hit a few 10s, hit an 11.
Can you even track it at that point?
I can actually show you a video right now of getting 12. Not landing
like
it,
rotations.
But
seeing the rotation.
Yeah, I was I'm a quarter short from making 12. So it
were you naked?
Happen.
You'll get it.
No, I was fully clothed.
That's the most legendary edit ever.
Was I naked? Man, okay. To go in my defense, it was
so
hot.
It was hot.
It was so hot.
I was there. It was hot.
It was super, super hot. I'm wearing corduroy white 70s pants. Like, no flex. I needed to take those pants off. Like. Jake, he was there. He knew it. I needed to take those pants off. I didn't want to get naked, but I had to in order to make it happen. Like, you saw how many times I was pulling up my pants. Like,
oh, yeah.
There was no possible way I was going to get it. It was either that or I ripped my pants. Like, I wasn't going to rip my pants because I really liked those
Fair enough.
Pants. Like,
I think it made the edit that much better.
You gotta adapt.
Yeah, you gotta adapt. But yes, I am going
yeah.
for... I am currently going for 12J.
Well, that's exciting.
I have edit
that.
4 that I've been scheming on. I have another thing that I want to do with Colin that I've been trying to plan out for, like, I mean, I kind of shared with you guys.
Yeah.
I don't want to share here because
yeah.
it's okay. just, like, really important.
Exclusive, stay tuned.
You can do
exclusive
another episode for when it actually happens.
I'm very, very excited for.
Cool.
So, yes, I am going for it.
Awesome. I'm looking
nice.
Forward
you
to that.
You got this.
What about, I think Ben had a really good question. Where is he at?
Ben?
You've been in the Kendama scene... since near the beginning, what do you think about the current state of Kendama? For example, culture, exposure, companies, players, media, tricks, etc.
Hands down, it's growing fast, and it's growing fast. People may think that it's dying, but it's not dying. It's actually people within the community that actually care are still growing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting more people that truly care about it growing it. Yes, there's going to be pockets. No matter what, there's going to be pockets. But it's continuously growing every single day. There are going to be companies that drop off, but those are, like, the companies that, like, want to get in it for, like, a quick dollar.
Right.
Which is fine. Any company can come in, and any other company will come in and can come in. We should allow that, actually. Because regardless, in the end, it's awareness of what Kendama is. And if somebody else were to get into Kendama within these B-grade companies that we may not like because they're making money, it doesn't matter. The reason being is because they are spreading awareness too, and they don't even know it. If they were to sell a Kendama to somebody, and then that person really digs deep into that, who are they going to find? They are going to find those people that are truly passionate about Kendama.
Yeah.
And what's that going to do? It's going to inspire them to be part of that. And then in turn, we have another generation of people that are just going to be part of it, that want to be part of it, truly be part of it,
yeah,
and grow it. So it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
It's very true.
It's really on how we look at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something that's been really big for me, and maybe this can be an extension of this question, is...
I hope I answered the question.
No, you totally did.
You totally, yeah, okay, that was great. Just in terms of how do we want a family or a business or a principal or an educator to first experience Kendama? Do we want them to see us as a bunch of hooligans? Or do we want them to see us as a bunch of inspiring young humans that are transforming our minds, that are empowering humans?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so that's not a fear, because fear, as we spoke of, is an illusion, but something that I've been aware of as like a tendency of how we carry ourselves. And something I love you say is like, love that you say is, you know, how do you carry Kendama? How do you carry yourself? And that's the intention, each breath, each step that you're walking into the day. Every time you wear that Kendama around your neck, you're representing Kendama. Every time that you walk into a store and someone asks you about Kendama, and you either offer kindly to share, or you maybe are having a bad day and you make a sarcastic comment, they're going to see that maybe as their first Kendama experience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that's something that I just want to continue to put out there is, you know, how you carry yourself with a Kendama could influence how a principal sees Kendama in her school.
Right.
You know?
You don't want a negative connotation associated with it. Yeah.
Because there are humans out there that have the perception of skateboarders or skiers or snowboarders being hooligans or, like, mm-hmm, vandals, and that's because of different things that may have occurred in their own experience. And so, mm-hmm,
there's always like the person that ruins it for the rest, though, you know. Mm-hmm. But no, that's a good point. It's something to definitely think about.
It's an all, it's, yeah, everything is an opportunity, yeah, to grow and to, you know, become more aware.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you hit that question on the nail. I just wanted to, yeah, fill that one in. What else we got in here? It's a breakdancing question.
Why Velcro strap shoes?
Oh.
Okay.
We haven't had it yet.
So check this out.
We haven't had the public service announcement.
The public service announcement. If it ain't Puma, I ain't wearing it. Hashtag, I made it. I made that one. I absolutely love Pumas. I will wear Puma clothing, whatever, whatever. When I had moved to Atlanta, I remembered getting rid of all of my old shoes and finally, like, getting a pair of Pumas again. Like, Puma suede are always my favorite shoes. I actually stole my first pair from my older sister when I was in middle school. That she, like, I remember, like, cleaning them, and I was like, and, like, straight up took them from my sister, and she knew that I was wearing them because I really liked them. Anyway, when you find something that you really like, why change? If you find something that you love, why change it? And you know that you it works for you. Yeah. Why change it? I mean, always be open to newer things, but I know that this works for me, and I've always wanted a pair of Velcro Pumas, and I could never find them. And one day I went into Puma and I found them. They had them in black and white, like black with white sole and then white with black sole. And I was like, both. Immediately, I bought both of them immediately because I wanted Velcros so much. I think that they remind us to be kids. Mm. Kids are like the most purest thing ever. Like, all they think about is being happy and playing. They remind me to be a kid. They remind me that we have pure happiness inside of us still. We just have to express that.
Yeah.
But that's why I wanted these Velcro shoes, because I've always wanted them, and it reminds me of being a kid.
Mm.
And kid shoes are the sickest. Like, they have the illest looking Velcro shoes ever on the market. You have, like, Elmos. You have, like, Big Bird ones. You like, excuse me, I just straight up drooled right there. But they have the best looking shoes, right? Yeah. Then they're
and
so cute.
Up.
You
why
can,
we
yeah,
do that?
Dude, come on. I absolutely love kid shoes.
All right.
But that's why I have Velcros.
That's awesome.
That's a great one.
All right.
Okay, one more.
Yeah, go for it.
Before I ask my last question, I don't
go
know
for
what
it.
You want to wrap
go
up
for
with,
it.
But How long did you grow your hair out when you had full head of dreadlocks? And then when you cut them, why did you choose to hold one on?
Okay. I had my locks. I had my locks for 9.5 years when I had them. I told myself that I was going to keep my locks until they made it past my knees. In 2012, I ended up cutting them when they were an inch away from my knees. About an inch. Not even that much. I could have gone and done it, but I felt it was the right time for change. My mom had been asking me, you know, cut your hair for the longest time, and I just remember saying, are you going to pay me to cut my hair? Because I'm not going to cut my hair. Like, I absolutely love my hair. I did this for a reason, you know, and I have a goal that I want to make. But one night, like, I was flying home for Thanksgiving, and I was like, you know what? I need this change. Like, there's something telling me, like, dude, you need to get rid of the weight that you've been carrying around. It's time for you. Something was telling me that. Like, I remember looking in the mirror before I got on my flight, and I was like, it's time, you know? Ended up flying to Sacramento from Atlanta for Thanksgiving, and I told my mom, I was like, Mom, grab the clippers. I'm ready. She sat down. I had freaking Aldrin come over and record it. Like,
yeah, you made an edit out of it.
Yeah, I made an edit out of it. Like, it was the right time. Mm. And the reason why I kept this one, not, it's one now, but this is actually 6 or 7.
Whoa.
Put into one lock. Mm. So from here on up is actually one lock, but this is like 7, I believe.
Yeah, it looks
6 or 7, right?
Yeah.
So I told myself, like, I didn't make it past my knees, but I'm still going to complete it with these. Mm. And when this makes it down to past my knees, I'll decide whether or not I want to cut it. But the reason why I'm growing my hair out again is because I remember specifically reading something online where there was somebody telling, it was like on a really big, like on Reddit or something like that, but this person ended up saying, you can't get anywhere in life if you grow your hair out as like dreadlocks or like growing it long as a man or something like that. Like, you must cut your hair and clean up and be part of what society tells
Such
you to
bullshit.
Be. And that was wrong. That was wrong for me to hear. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what, dude? Gonna prove that person wrong again. Yeah. Like, I remember it, like having my locks before, and I felt like I was carrying them around for a reason. And really, like, now I'm growing my hair out again, and I'm gonna show, like, you can do whatever it is that you want in life if you truly want it, with long hair or not,
with dreadlocks
or not. It's not. It doesn't matter what it is you want. You can do. It's right in front of you. The universe wants you to live in abundance, but you have to want what the universe wants to give you. And you have to go and get it and do it. And I'm going to do that again.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be my hair tie. This long one is going to be my hair tie.
Actually, I have one little dread.
Yeah.
And my, wow, that's inspiring. I have one baby dread back here.
Yeah.
I got the one dread, dude.
The Jedi.
And it's the total hair tie. One dread, one love. Shout out One Dread, One Love on Instagram. Just ties your hair up. It's all you need. You don't need any more plastic rubber bands, you know? It works out.
That's great.
Well, thanks for sharing. That's a really, like, yeah, you know, profound story. I'm glad you delved into that.
Well, thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you
for
having me.
This has been,
like,
one of the coolest episodes.
You.
I mean, yeah, shout out to Jack Baker here. He helps produce Click Clack Radio.
Thank you,
Jack Baker.
Thank you, Jack, for having us.
We have one final question, though.
Do we?
Yes.
What is it?
My favorite question for both of you: how can Kendama change the world?
Rapid fire, go.
Going deep.
I think I'd like to add on to what I said earlier. Failure, like, I think it's so important. I think failure is just awesome. I don't know. I think it makes you grow as a person. I think it pushes you outside your comfort zone, and I think that could absolutely change the way people see the world, and the way, you know, change the world in a small pocket, but that, you know, that grows. And that,
absolutely.
You know, that
I feel like failure is part of it.
Yeah.
But I will go back on what I said as well. Whatever energy you're putting into your hardest trick, you tell this to anyone. It could, someone's hardest trick could be a big cup in. Whatever energy you are putting into your hardest trick, if you were to apply that to any situation in life, positively, of course, because there are people out there that have ill will. If you put that energy of determination, of motivation, of wanting and doing into anything it is in life, you're golden. And it's right in front of you for the taking, and the universe wants to give it to you. But it's up to you to make that choice to get there.
I agree. And that, yeah, like, along with the failure thing, it's like you can fail and just decide to just live with that and just
and bail.
Or you can actually, like, fight back to, mm-hmm. no, I won't.
And everyone is going to have a different way of portraying
Absolutely.
It. But that's how I believe Kendama can truly change the world.
Yeah.
So find your
It can
flow.
Eventually become a peace toy. For
it
sure.
Is it is a peace toy.
Thank you.
Have to look, we already have to look at it as a peace
it
toy.
It is a peace toy. Find your flow, spike hard, catch low. Thank you, Dave Mateo.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that message. I hope that, you know, really inspires some people listening to this podcast, and I think it will.
Thank you for having
Thank you,
thank
Dave.
For having
thank you, Turner.
Thank you,
Josh, for co-hosting
thank
in
you.
Molly's place
a pleasure.
Today.
It's been an honor to be here, seriously.
Yeah.
Like, thank
really
you so much.
It. And thank you, Kendama USA, for helping get Dave out here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kendama USA.
Yeah. Thank you, Kendama USA, for sponsoring this podcast. You can go to Kendama USA, and you can use the code CLICKCLACK for 10% off your order.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Grab yourself a Turner Thorne mod.
Oh.
Pick it up.
Yes.
How are you carrying yourself? Bring it into the world. That's a wrap, I think.
Yeah. We can go write a wrap after this.
We're in.
Sweet. Thank you. Radio.